are listening to CJSF 90.1 FM.
Broadcasting from Burnaby Mountain, British Columbia.
Welcome to the Canadian Philosophy Show with Kira Tianen and Michael Cadis. Today we are going to speak about meat morality in a relativist perspective. This is a complex ethical debate surrounding meat consumption, so we're going to explore some thought-provoking questions and arguments backed by philosophical perspectives. Some of these will be the cultural context and moral relativism, freedom of choice and societal norms, religious and scientific perspectives, economic considerations, animal welfare and rights, sustainability and ethical meat consumption, and if we have time, we'll conclude with a fact check. So our first question comes with an intriguing layer about the meat-eating debate. How does cultural context influence our views of the morality of eating meat? In many Western cultures, meat consumption is normalized even celebrated, while in some Eastern cultures, vegetarianism is more prevalent due to the religious or philosophical beliefs. This cultural variation demonstrates on how moral judgments about eating meat can be relative to societal norms and traditions. Moral relativists argue that the permissibility of eating meat depends on a community's moral code, and under this view, eating beef may be permissible in some cultures, but forbidden in others. Another question, if morality is relative to cultural context, can we make universal judgments about the ethics of eating meat? From a moral relativist standpoint, making universal judgments about the ethics of eating meat becomes challenging. What's considered morally acceptable in one culture may be taboo in another. This relativist view suggests that morality of eating meat consumption should be evaluated within its specific cultural context rather than by universal standards.
I have a question. How do we define culture? And the reason I'm asking the question is because I'm aware in my lifetime of being involved with, aware of many subcultures. So even within the overall culture, there are groups of people who are vegetarians, groups of people who are vegan, and many of them feel that it's immoral to kill animals and eat them, among other reasons why they're vegetarians or vegans. Our overall culture here in the West generally is eating meat is acceptable. So I'm going to raise that question right at the beginning. Is if we were going to make an argument that culture gets to define what's moral or not, then first we're going to have to define culture. And I'm not sure how easy that's going to be.
So for myself, culture is mostly based on what the government allows. So what are our laws and practices, and whether we influence that or implement them and enforce them. So in Canada, we are allowed to eat beef. Sometimes it is even promoted by the government, despite that there is subcultures within Canada that disagree with it. There hasn't been a law that states that I'm not allowed to eat meat.
Well, you're conflating law with morality. They're very different things. There would be so many examples to refute that. If the government gets to determine what's moral, are you telling me that if you lived in Nazi Germany, the Nazi government gets to define what's moral or not? Are you telling me that slaves, black slaves in the South in the United States, that was perfectly moral because it was legal? It can't be the case that the law or the government gets to determine what's moral.
Yeah, there are some extreme cases in the past where the government has not been morally just. But I would argue that for the most part, the laws that we do have are based on morals. those morals still represent the majority of society. And that's where, like in Canada, we elect our officials to represent what our morals are.
So with respect to the topic that you raised today, eating meat or not eating meat, are you saying that the significant subcultures within Canada, within the United States, within other meat-eating countries, which believe very strongly that it's wrong, morally wrong, to kill animals and eat them, and there's variations of that, right? There's cultures within those cultures or subcultures within the subcultures. For example, there is a subculture within the anti-eat-meeting community, which says that it's acceptable to eat meat that you kill yourself, to eat an animal that you raise and kill yourself, but it's immoral to eat meat that was raised industrially, and you didn't actually kill it, but it was processed to, like, at a, you know, exactly. So my point is that there's so many variations, and I really would take exception to the claim that those many, many people within Western countries that are morally opposed, they say they're morally opposed to eating meat, that they're wrong merely because meat eating is acceptable, but according to the overall culture of the government.
And I think that leads me into kind of my next question about whether or not our personal freedom is highly valued or not. And so how do we balance personal freedom with ethical considerations like this when it comes to our diet? You know, it can be very complex. You know, a moral relativist might argue that in societies, valuing our individual liberty, the choice to eat meat should be respected as a personal decision.
Well, now we're getting into the larger debate about moral relativism. I don't know if you want to do that, but you're showing what one of the problems is with the concept of moral relativism. If morality is relative, who decides what's moral? I've already pointed out what I think are some of the problems with defining the government as the unit that gets to decide what's moral. I mean, there's some major problems with that, I think. Although you've said that most of the time governments are moral or laws are moral, although I don't know if I agree with that either.
And also, like, they're elected. Like, they're elected by the people, for the most part, in a democratic society.
So was Plato immoral when he advocated for philosopher kings rather than democratically elected politicians to run the government? Was Plato advocating immorality? Plato and the Republic claim that the most qualified people to lead a country are philosopher kings who are not democratically elected. They are,
right.
They inherit their status.
Right. I remember this. Okay. You know, depending on your point of view, at least in Canada, with our election coming up, you know, I really seem to think that we also push our philosophical kings onto the people that represent each party, like, you know, having Carney. We want him in power because he's experienced with the Bank of Canada. And so I think that there's a lot of push for him to be our philosophical king rather than him just wanting it himself.
So you think that people who support Carney support him because they think he's like a philosopher or has like good moral judgment rather than just being a self-serving politician? Is that what you're saying?
Mostly because he agrees with climate change. The fact that he agrees with the fact that it exists.
Oh, I see. He's not a climate change denier. He's not an anthropogenic climate change denier. Okay. So, yeah, it's we're getting like a mixture of like morality with politics. Yeah. So don't get me wrong. When I said that, in my view, morality and law are two different things, I'm not saying that they're not intertwined. I'm not saying that there's a relationship that there's not a relationship between the two. There definitely is. But I just think that they diverge a lot.
Then how would you define morality without a universal truth? Like, the reason why a relativist relates to other things like politics is because then we have something tangible to understand instead of living in kind of like an idealistic view.
Position that politicians and legislators should be guided by morality. That's what they should do.
That's what they ought to
that's
be.
What they ought
and that's
to
what
do.
I do believe in the goodness of people. I'm very optimistic, so I don't think that somebody that we elect is power hungry. Or at least I would hope that the people who go out and vote are capable of recognizing somebody who just wants power. Kind of like Polyev.
Mm-hmm. But there's other reasons why a politician might not be guided by morality besides the politician is self-serving. Let me give you an example. A politician wants to get elected. So the politician, in theory, will not get elected if the politician doesn't please a sufficient number of people with his or her promises or past performance to get elected. If the politician doesn't get elected, then the politician has no power. So the politician is guided perhaps not by morality and perhaps not by his or her own interests, although a lot of politicians are. Like right now in the United States, we're seeing a lot of politicians and people in power guided by their financial interest, right? But the third possibility is that politicians are simply guided by what they think will get them elected. And that may not be what's moral. So, for example, what about politicians in the United States, and you see this a little bit in Canada now too, who use the culture wars to get public support. So fear of immigrants, fear of people who have different sexual orientation.
Fear of taxes.
Yeah, whatever it is, fear. They use fear as a strategy to get elected. You can't say that's moral. There's no way that it's moral by any definition of morality to make up falsities about immigrants being responsible for crime and taking away all of our resources. That's simply not factually true. It can't be moral to make that argument. And yet a lot of politicians ride to success by playing on that fear.
And I think that fear comes in with people not being financially literate and not understanding economics when it comes to their own country. So I think fear is a good driver for politicians. But I don't think that is an intention. I think it is something that is a byproduct of a politician, a true politician who's trying to make a change in society. And change normally for people who get elected are good. I think that people naturally are driven towards good. And the fear-mongering is more so just the byproduct of that effort.
So you think that a politician that lies, like I'm going to say Donald Trump as an example, of a politician that lies to the people, is really striving for good, and that the lying is like inadvertent or a byproduct of striving for good. I'm not sure what you're saying.
Yeah, kind of like, you know, like when you're dealing with a child and you know you can't, that telling them the truth of whatever is good for them, they're not going to understand it because they don't have the literacy to be able to. So sometimes a small lie to be able to get the same outcome.
Mm-hmm. There's another way of looking at it too, which is, it's something that I've been involved with in my life. There's something called nonviolent communication. And there's various organizations and workshops and a whole subculture of people that follow a man by the name of Marshall Rosenberg. I think he passed away, but he developed this whole body of theory around the premise that there's certain universal needs that all people are striving to meet, that people are driven primarily by meeting their needs. And these needs are many of them are universal, like need for security, need for love, need for, food and sustenance, need for shelter, need for to be respect. And there's a whole long, you need for autonomy. There's a long, long list of them. So Marshall Rosenberg talked about how even the worst people, what we would call the worst people, even Adolf Hitler, was a person simply trying to meet universal needs. It's a pretty difficult pill to swallow when it comes to people that extreme. Like, I would say it's difficult to understand Trump as maybe you disagree with me. Like, I don't really experience him as a person striving for good, like me or you, just trying to meet needs.
I think he is in his own perspective. I think, when it comes to representing the others, I think that's really what his election was about. Not that I'm saying that I support everything Trump does, but when it comes to what the people were concerned about, which was jobs and how they're going to survive in the back 40, outside of the typical society that most people live in New York, I think he was trying to represent the have-nots.
Hmm. Okay, you're entitled to your view.
And I think that's why he got elected, because the have-nots came out, and they normally don't.
All right. I don't agree with you, but I don't want to belabor it.
That's okay.
I want to let you go on with your agenda.
Yeah. but that does bring us to some economic considerations about eating meat. So whether or not it would be morally permissible to have a food system where the foods would only be accessible to the rich, to the ones that have it. The moral permissibility of a two-tiered food system where meat is a luxury for the wealthy is a complex issue. From a relativist perspective, if a society accepts inequality as a norm, which we do, this might extend to food access. And then this raises our questions about fairness and social justice and how that would transcend into cultural relativism. So this really ties into everything going on in politics. Whether or not we accept eating meat, because we know scientifically that we are over capacity, and it's contributing to climate change, and it's not sustainable.
So you're talking about the high carbon footprint of raising farm animals and eating them, and
I believe
that's one thing, and there's also the water consumption.
Yeah, there's the water consumption. There's I think the big thing is methane. I know that there has been ways to mitigate this, but that mitigation is going to cost. And that's what brings us to this two-tiered system.
So by two-tiered system, you mean where meat is or will be so expensive that only well-off people can afford it? Are we there now?
I feel like that's where we're heading, especially with the cost of groceries right now.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so one could argue that. Are you suggesting that that one could argue that meat is raising meat, eating meat, the meat industry is immoral because it is or will become too tiered as far as purchasing power, and that it damages, it contributes to global warming and environmental degradation, so therefore it's immoral?
I think that's the idealistic point of view, but in a moral relativist point of view, I would argue that it is morally permissible because that is a fact of today and how we operate as a society.
Well, you're illustrating one of the problems with moral relativism, which is that you're confusing, you're conflating is with ought. So if it's true empirically that that's the way the society is, that we're gradually moving toward a two-tiered capacity to purchase meat products, and it's a fact of the matter that even though meat, raising meat, might be harmful to the to ecology and to contributing to global warming, the fact is that people rely on it. The fact is that that's the way our society is. It's permissible. So if you say, well, since people rely on meat and it's permissible and that's the way it is, therefore it's moral, then you're conflating is with ought, because morality talks about what should be, not what is. So,
but what should be within realistic terms, I think, is what we ought to do. So the is maybe not the end conclusion, but it is an important premise.
What about reducing meat consumption? Is it one way or the other way? Like, what about a compromise where one would say, well, realistically, we're not going to abolish all meat, the meat consumption, but we need to reduce it. And would that be a more morally tenable position?
Reducing the amount of meat that we eat doesn't explain the problem of the raising costs if we were to reduce our meat intake due to those reasons, because then the price is still going to go up and we're still going to have a two-tiered system, which is unequal.
Well, then maybe the government should do what governments are supposed to do, and it should make an attempt to equalize the situation. So rather than what's happening, like, more and more in the United States, where governmental policies are taking money from the poor and giving them to the rich, maybe the government should be doing the opposite. It should be taxing the rich more and subsidizing meat for poor people. It's not necessary that poor people can't afford meat, because it could be subsidized.
The people, the taxpayers, right, go without. So why would they support a policy where they go without and they still pay for it?
Well, they're not going without. They're just contributing. So people that are well off, that have excess money, are going to be contributing toward people who can't afford meat. We're not talking about whether they want to. The question, I thought, was whether it's moral. Like, what would be the moral thing to do? Maybe people that are wealthy think it's in their financial interest to be immoral and to allow poor people to starve or to not get the nutrition they need. But that doesn't make it moral. It just means that they're acting in their self-interest against morality.
I think that is an unobtainable promise to ask society to make things equal with meat consumption when people purely enjoy it and they think that it is their individual right or their culture, which then infringes on their liberties.
Okay, so you're objecting to a society with a strong, like more of a socialistic society with a strong safety net, which guarantees a certain amount of resources and funds for poor people, for example, to buy meat that they want to buy. You object to that type of system?
It's not that I object to it. I think that just in a relativist point of view, the only people that contribute to that do it willingly. And that's where, like, in Canada, like, we're quite lucky to have people who do believe that they can make a difference. But I think their donations are willing. And once you were to require it from them, you would have a society who would riot.
Okay, so this is interesting because, as you said, we are getting into the debate over, like, morality. What's moral relativism? Is that like a legitimate concept? And I think I think it's problematic to argue, in my view, that people get to decide based on what they feel like doing or what's in their financial interest. They get to decide what's moral. I think the idea of the traditional view of morality, and the one that most ethicists will support, is that morality, and certainly Kant made this argument, that morality is universal, and it's fixed, and it's not changeable or dependent on how people happen to feel, like emotionally, politically, financially. That doesn't mean that people always act morally, and a lot of times they don't, but if people don't act according to morality, it doesn't mean that the morality is wrong or that the morality doesn't exist. So anyway, that's my view, is that this issue that you're raising about meat and distribution of resources in society, it really does touch this issue of, do people get to decide what's moral based on what they think is in their self-interest or their political views or their social views? Or does morality exist independent of what people happen to think? And the question is whether people are abiding by the moral rules or not. Do moral rules fluctuate based on public opinion? And if they do, then what's morality? Why do we even talk about morality? Why don't we just say public opinion? Even the word morality implies that there's something that transcends public opinion. There's something that transcends politics, something that transcends economics, or something that transcends what people want to do or not.
I think that's a really valid point, and I think that's something that moral relativists struggle with all the time. But the problem is that even though we ought to, how do we ought to? Because when you try to dissect it from what we ought to do in an idealistic, unlimited resource point of view, the reality is we don't have unlimited resources. And I'm going to remind you that you're listening to the Canadian Philosophy Show with Kira and Michael.
Now, I'm going to take the other side for a moment, to be fair about this. So I don't want to drive a hard line that there's no such thing as moral relativism, that morality is by definition fixed and universal, and the only question is whether people are being moral or not. I think that's an extreme position. So there's a middle ground, and I want to acknowledge it. The middle ground is that, and so when I say middle ground, I mean there's something in between, on one extreme saying morality is fixed, either people are moral or they're not, and people don't get to decide what's moral. Countries don't get to decide what's moral. Governments don't get to decide what's moral. Morality is morality no matter what anyone thinks and what any government thinks. That's sort of the traditional, like, hardline view about morality. That's the hardline anti-relativist view about morality. And then on the other extreme, you have the extreme moral relativist view, which is that morality is whatever culture or the subculture decides it is. And ultimately, it's sort of a there's an infinite